Moreover, the point that has to be made is, and actually in our own day and age, this is as true as it was in the early modern period, a war could never really be fought on the basis of current revenues. That is to say, the kinds of income that a king could expect in any given year were never enough by themselves simply to cover the cost of a war. You could only fight a war in the early modern period by borrowing, and that remains true in our own day and age. It's a well-known fact that the peak indebtedness of the American treasury was in the immediate aftermath of World War II, which, although it was successful, was also fought on the basis of very heavy borrowing. Just to give you an early modern figure for purposes of comparison, in the year 1574, the current revenue, the kind of regular revenues of the Castilian crown, could only cover about half of the cost of the war that Spain was fighting in the Netherlands, and the rest of the money was borrowed. So there's a sense in which the essential strength of the Dutch was less the actual revenues at their disposal than their ability to borrow more effectively than Spain. And the question there arises, well, all right, what was it that allowed the Netherlandish rebels to borrow more effectively than Spain? It seems to me that there are two key factors that are worth stressing. One of them is a basic difference of economic structure. The economy of the Netherlands, as I've mentioned before, was a very highly commercialized economy, and it was much more heavily based on trade than most other economies in Europe. It was also a very urban economy. Moreover, during the 1590s, a kind of a crucial decade during the revolt of the Netherlands, the seaborne commerce of the rebel provinces expanded dramatically, and this was primarily a seaborne commerce to the Baltic region, but also in other parts of the world as well. What all of this meant, therefore, maybe not be clear what's the connection between this and military matters, is that the economy of the rebel Netherlands, by its very nature, contained an awful lot more liquid capital than was the case in Castile. In Castile, the economy was much more heavily based on agriculture and on pastoralism. And what that meant is that the wealth of the people, the wealth of the society, was heavily invested in land, which is much less liquid. And what that meant, therefore, was that to tap wealth in the Netherlands, if it was done properly, could be done with much, much less social disruption and much, much less economic disruption than was the case in Castile, where capital was tied up in a fixed way and couldn't be accessed. It couldn't be put into a revenue stream in the same way without dispossessing people and upsetting the economy as a whole. So there's that structural difference in the economy. The second basic difference is that in the Habsburg Netherlands, the provincial assemblies, the provincial estates, were able to borrow money through a kind of government bond which had the complete confidence of the investors that bought them. And in fact, one of the crushing ironies of this is that almost all of the important fiscal innovations which made the Netherlands such an effective political entity to rebel against the Spanish crown, most of the innovations actually preceded the Dutch revolt. After the year 1515, for example, the provincial states in the Netherlands assumed direct control of public borrowing, and they assumed direct control of the sale and management of public bonds. After the year 1542, the provincial estates shifted from the funding of public debt on the uncertain foundation of irregularly collected taxes and sources of revenue, and they begin clipping them directly to regular taxes that came in. I mean, this seems like a kind of an abstruse fiscal detail. The point is just that people who bought government bonds knew that there was a dedicated revenue stream which existed, which was going to cover the interest on those bonds, and that made them rather more attractive investments. Indeed, by the year 1553 at the very latest, it's clear that a completely free market in government bonds had emerged in the Netherlands, and this provided an enormous amount of investor confidence in them. In Spain itself, there was a very sharp contrast. Spain was never really able to develop a long-term funded public debt which inspired the same degree of investor confidence, because the debts of the Spanish crown were not institutional debts of the monarchy as a whole. They remained the personal debts of the monarch himself. They were personal debts rather than public debts, if you want to think of it this way, and interest payments were not as closely tied to reliable public revenues. What that meant, therefore, was that a Spanish king was much freer to repudiate his debts than was the case in the Netherlands. And, as we've seen, the Spanish monarchs did do so. But what that meant was that anybody who bought a Spanish government bond knew that there was this danger of repudiation, and for that reason, it was a riskier, it was closer to a junk bond, if you want to think of it this way, they demanded higher rates of interest. So, having slogged through all these financial details, I think we can say that the Dutch system of borrowing inspired higher investor confidence, which allowed them to borrow at lower rates of interest. It seems ironic, it seems to me, that such a titanic conflict should be so directly influenced by investor confidence, but that's very clearly the case. Indeed, so solid was the credit of the Dutch Republic that when in the year 1655, with the wars finished, the government began to pay off part of the principal on the public debt, it's known that from observers who watched this in the marketplace, that people who lined up to kind of finally have themselves bought out again began to cry because they didn't know where now they were going to invest their money with such safety and such ease.